You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And it actually made me feel like, I feel like in my life as an artist, I've done a lot of stuff. I've done a lot of things that, for me, make me happy. It's never really been about, I need my prize. I need you to look at me, right, to recognize me for what I've done. Because I feel like my thing is such a personal journey that I've taken. And whoever recognizes, it's okay, it's wonderful, thank you so much. But it has deeply made me so happy and satisfied.
The art of appreciation is lost in this world of dog eat dog.
Hello, and welcome to the Afro Existential Podcast, a new 6-part series entitled Creating Art in Crisis. I'll be your host, Blaine Sparks Teamer, as we explore and share with you how these unprecedented times are affecting creativity and how artists are processing and finding solutions to take their art to the next level.
Blaine, I'm back.
Oh, welcome back.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, where have you been?
That's been the number one question in our inbox. Where have I been?
I mean, I put money on your books, so I thought you'd be taken care of. Did you get that?
So you let the cat out the bag?
Meow.
But I wanted to make it clear to everyone that it wasn't COVID, by the grace of Jesus Christ.
Amen.
I had some outstanding jaywalking tickets.
You know how that is.
And yes, and found out that there was a warrant out for my arrest.
Okay.
For an old boot that I got put on my car long, long, long time ago. Thought I outran that.
Right.
I mean, that was like 20 years. That was before I understood. I didn't understand how to, the parking on the opposite sides of the street. You know, that's
right. Thing. That's a huge thing out here. Yeah.
Huge thing. Damn, right. Wiped out all my moving savings when I first relocated to Los Angeles.
Right.
I had a parking issue and old boot. I just ran away from.
Right. On foot, because you couldn't have run away in the car because it had a boot on it.
I left the car. I left it.
Wasn't worth it. Wasn't worth what the fee was.
Yep, almost changed my name. But the city was unorganized then. It was before Garcetti. So, you know, they weren't keeping track.
Right.
And so I thought about going into witness protection, you know, based off of your advice.
Right.
Just decided to...
Face the music.
Face the music, exactly.
You can't stop till you face the music.
You can't. And that's where I've been. Now I'm back.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm just going to call Cheryl Pepsi Riley up and tell her she doesn't need to come in for this episode because she was going to co-host with me. It's not the same. Yeah.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you standing by me.
The whole time. Yes.
And literally holding the fort down.
And if I knew when you called what that call was about, I would have called and come right down to the courthouse to do whatever I could. I didn't quite know what it.
It wouldn't have
or what courthouse I went to.
Yeah. It was Inglewood. It wouldn't have made any difference because they are serious.
About their boots.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they got to make their money back. This COVID has basically bankrupted everybody. So they are calling in
everything. And don't go knocking their boots because they will not have it. Not in Inglewood.
Not in the Iwood. That's what I call it. The Iwood.
I called it the Ingles. I always called it the Ingles.
That sounds so charming.
Right.
They weren't charming in the county jail. Orange is not the new black. In the Ingles.
And everybody can't wear stripes.
I can. As long as they're vertical and not horizontal.
Did you tell them that?
Did they care? No. I want you to know that I really evolved in my time in lockup.
Don't we all? Don't we all though? But go. God, you said you took care of it. I almost caught
you. That's what I did.
Well, I just want to say welcome back. It has not been the same without you.
You've done a lovely job. Well, we got a great episode for you guys this week. Buckle up. We'll be talking to Robin Gardenhire, the artistic director of the City Ballet of Los Angeles.
Wonderful interview. When we come back.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, it's Alistair Justin Black, host of Theatre in the Black. Have you listened to our wonderful audio play, Dead Weight, A Journey in Afro-Existentialism?
The art of appreciation is lost in this world of dog-eat-dog.
Perhaps it's just a question of style.
If you have listened,
watch what you say.
Go to our website right now and see how you can win the Afro-Existential Crisis Little Black Hoodie. Just go to afroexpodcast.com. Go today. Your roots will thank you. And that's no lie.
This week on the podcast, we'll be interviewing Robin Gardenhire, founder of the City Ballet of Los Angeles. Ms. Gardenhire is a native Angeleno who established City Ballet of Los Angeles School with the idea of bringing dance to those who are economically and socially disadvantaged. Gardenhire developed this professional training program to address this inequity in the arts. City Ballet has built an open school and the emerging artist program to reach students all over Los Angeles to promote concert dance to all. Ms. Gardenhire is a former dancer with the American Ballet Theater, Cleveland Ballet, White Oak Project, Carol Armitage, and Joffrey 2. Enjoy the interview. Hello, Robin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We are so excited to have you on the show, and we just can't wait to hear what's going on with City Ballet of LA. First, I want to know, how has the pandemic affected your organization in general?
It shut us down completely. We were shut down in March like everybody else and let go of everybody. We took about a good month to get back into teaching on Zoom. So we did create a class on Zoom only for our academy kids at the time. We're also celebrating our 20th year, so we were preparing for that with the kids as well as bringing the professional company back. So it was heartbreaking. Mm. And so far we've only done Zoom classes with the kids.
How has attendance been?
It's been pretty good. We've only done academy so far, so it's not as many kids, about 30 kids in those classes. The open school, nobody really bit at the chance to take class on Zoom because, you know, they come on Saturdays only. It's for fun. And I think the parents weren't into getting a Zoom together for them to skip around in the living room.
People were like, I can't do it right now.
Yeah. So we're gearing up. I have a new administrator coming in and just to get everybody on board on what we're doing for the fall.
Okay. So you're preparing for a fall season. You're trying to regroup and regenerate the entire.
Right. The program to see if it can run. Yeah.
All on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
Hard.
Yeah. What's the biggest challenge you're facing with that?
I guess just really keeping the kids engaged. All of the girls in the academy, highest academy class, are all about 12 years old. And at 12 years old, when you're in the studio, this might be the breakdown time. This might be the time, I don't want to dance anymore. Or they're inspired and they want to continue. So I kind of feel like it's a difficult time to be on Zoom, just to read what they're thinking and how their body's working. Are they improving? Because you can't see that clearly on Zoom for a ballet class. Mm. I'm not gonna lie about it. I mean, a lot of people are raving about the whole issue, but it's an in-person art form. It's you know, unless you're already a professional and you're doing film. You know, but if you're raising kids and raising them properly, it's really difficult to do that on Zoom.
And so what are people, what part are they raving about when you say they're raving?
Some people, well, because some people are really like going for it and teaching all kinds of people, like talking about they can teach all over the world. So they're making it in a way that I think it's great that they have that kind of force within them to be able to reach across the pond to teach even more people.
Right.
But I'm very much dedicated to my school and my kids and what I'm growing and preparing. I'm not about the big, let's just do a class. Oh, that was fabulous. And it wasn't, because I can hardly see you over there in that box. I think that people are psyching themselves up, and I understand it. I just can't get psyched up like that. It's a very personal thing with the child that I'm working with.
I know you were having some challenges in regards to your space prior to the pandemic. Can you explain what that challenge was?
Okay. So ironically, our executive director at the Redshield Youth and Community Center, that we've been there for 20 years, has now retired and gone on to something else. So she was our champion, really. They donated the space to us, and we had three beautiful ballet studios for our classes. So the kids barely pay anything to take classes because it's about giving back to the community. And new officers came in and took over and decided that they needed money for those studios. And I understand people need money for things to run, but I didn't have that in my budget. My budget is paying my teachers and my administrator. So they pretty much were asking me how much I could pay. And I said, how much do you want me to pay? Because I'm not raising money like that. And they came up with like $3,000 a month. And so I just chuckled a little bit and pretty much just said, you know, I probably can't do that. Well, why don't you raise the prices on the kids? And I was really taken back by that, because I thought the program, we were partners and this is a community center.
Right.
So why would I raise the prices on the parents like that? So, and I also
serve the same community. This was a program, a huge ballet program, dance program, that served an entire community center in downtown Los Angeles.
Yes.
And Robin's prices, you know, fit that community to where it was accessible. Like, Robin, you were charging children, what, $25 a month?
$25 a month for a ballet class, which is insane. Wow. Because a single ballet class would cost you about $25.
Where there are academies that are like for their semesters are charging $4,000 and $5,000 for the semester of, you know, that are also serving Black and Brown communities. But this was $25 a month for a professionally run company that is entirely donation based. Like, there are no large sponsors. And so for this, I'm saying all this to explain the impact of someone coming in and going, next month, we're going to raise the expectation to $3,000 a month. It's not even like next season, like give you some time to fundraise, give you some time to make an adjustment. I wanted to make that point to say this was an impossible expectation.
Right. You know, she just doesn't know. And most programs, I mean, when you think about throughout the community, people have outreach programs and they have ballet classes, but it's never specific to a professional ballet program, because I find that the industry, as far as people giving money to things, is, oh, are they doing gymnastics? Are they doing hip hop? Are they doing ballet? Are they doing are they doing all these things, which is wonderful. No bad thing about saying that, but you're not raising a structured dancer to go on to be a professional dancer. And that's what this program is. So there is a variation on to give money to something that is given everything and everybody can come and do whatever you want to do. And then the professional program is really gearing kids towards the concert world of dance and really taking that on. So it takes a lot to build that type of program. And 20 years, we're very happy. So in leaving, you know, the thing is, I never got upset with what they were doing, because it was new people coming in. I still felt that wonderful feeling of 20 years able to build my program without the whole thing about tuition, about, you know, raising money for rent. I've been very, very blessed in that aspect. And, you know, you get kind of comfortable with that as well, right? Have a place, you can go to that place, you don't have to push because you don't have to pay, blah, blah, blah. So there's like that kind of thing that went on in my head. It's like, well, maybe I need to push a little bit more. So I actually met a woman down the street in downtown on Hope and 11th. We were on 11th Street already, just across Figueroa. And I was asking her about her prices and everything. And then she says, so who's your school? What is your school? And I told her City Valley of Los Angeles. And she was like, oh, and she gave me a huge hug. I love your program. It's a great program. And I was like, whoa, you know? And so we discussed everything, the money, and it wasn't going to be $3,000 a month. And so I had already just had my head there. I was like, oh, yes, I can do this. I can just move right along. Then everything was shut down. And so was she, the new studio. Yeah. I also had words in with the Grand Avenue Arts School of the Arts. I approached them as well. Their doors were open. We were going to have a meeting within the week of everything closing down. No meeting. But I think that's a venue as well for us to go to. So now we're on Zoom. But I never went down to, oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm going to close. What's going to happen? I pretty much have just go through that line, do the Zoom classes for right now, doing more paperwork than I've done before. Mm. I'm writing a book.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
Yes. And I'm doing pretty well with it. I'm very excited. And just going the route of letting this time be a time where there's things that I've been missing that I can pull together without being in the studio. Thinking about company stuff, I've been working on this ballet, Jefferson and Sally, them being, and I think during this time with all the Black Lives Matter stuff that's going on with it, and it's always been my idea to do this story, but of course it's changed in all kinds of different ways. And now I have a film aspect to it. I came up with the idea probably 5-6 years ago. I have some writings, and it's just evolved during this time because I have the time to do it and to really think about it and think about it in different ways and how people will react to it right now. So I've just really been doing a lot of that. So not so much creating dance right now. And I see a lot of people on film doing these great videos, and they're in their kitchen, they're in their living room, they're out on the street. And I don't have that in me to do. I don't have the drive to do that, but I think I'm doing a lot of stuff right now that will prepare me for 2001.
Stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
I keep saying 2001, 2020.
Oh, if it was 2001, I would have been a young thing out here in the streets.
I think what's great about what you just said is that I think part of all of this happening, it's like the universe is forcing us to take a moment and stop. And we really need to be in our own space and to be still. Mm-hmm. And look at all of the stuff that we've been putting off because we've been going, and look where we are now.
Yep.
And so there's all this, there is a part whenever you create anything, it's about the prep work. It's about the time that you kind of sit and you write it down, you plan for the future, what your next move is going to be. And if nothing else, this has forced a lot of artists to have to do it.
Right. And we're used to go.
Right. And then other things off to the side, you know.
Right.
I think, you know, as you were saying this, I know as a writer, I don't necessarily need to see plays or like sometimes like just watching a video where somebody's talking about their process or things that Mm-hmm. I need to know, or their story, and it's inspirational. That's as much as important as doing the actual writing sometimes. Yes. As well.
Yes, yeah. definitely. You know, I just saw this, I think it was a PBS special. Oh gosh, and the lady's first name is Rosalind. I can't think of her last name. She's famous now, but she's been doing this paintings since the 60s, and they've all been some hideaway closet kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know who this woman was. And it was, to me, that feeling of people want fame and fortune. They want to be on screen all the time and everything. And I was looking at her life, and she did not make it. She's now 80 some years old and is just now being recognized for her work. But she didn't stop. She just kept doing her work all the time. There, people were not ready for it. Because I looked at her stuff and I was like, oh my God, this was done that long ago. It really stunned me, and it actually made me feel like, I feel like in my life as an artist, I've done a lot of stuff. I've done a lot of things that, for me, make me happy. It's never really been about, I need my prize. I need you to look at me, right, to recognize me for what I've done. Because I feel like my thing is such a personal journey that I've taken. And whoever recognizes, it's okay, it's wonderful, thank you so much. But it has deeply made me so happy and satisfied.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a great point, because we're now in this time where it's so much about, you know, the 5 minutes of fame, like the instant gratification of something.
Yeah. And people aren't even getting 15 no more, Blaine?
It's five. I mean, think about it. It's five.
It's five.
It used to be 15, yeah. Damn. You know? TikTok is how many seconds, right? Like, that's
how much do you need of me, you know?
Yeah. I've been talking to a lot of different company directors and talking about the finances, you know, how people are paid. Now, I was fortunate to be in a ballet company, and some modern companies, of course, now an Ailee, Complexion, stuff like that, are getting paid better, you know. But I think in general, the whole world of the ballet world, concert world, need to really look at their budgets and how they're paying the artists. Like, where's all this money going to? They raise a lot of money. And what exactly is it going to? Because I don't think it's going to paychecks for dancers anyways, you know? Right. So maybe we need to cut the company a little bit more, make it a little bit smaller so that those people are making a real living, you know? What's going on with the budgets?
Right.
And, I never had a budget, so.
So you're saying when you were in a company, the way that they approached paying artists was above a living wage.
It's not above. It was like you could live. You could just live. You can't save anything. So it's not like a job and when you have benefits and all this stuff going on. Do get medical. You get insurance and that sort of thing. But there's so many other smaller companies that you get paid per gig, and it's not.
But
it's
now not, you're saying that the average dancer is lower than that. It's not, it's more of a gig wage. It's more of a performance wage versus you're a dancer by trade. Like, you're a dancer mm-hmm. as your job. They're like, don't expect this to be job. You need to be driving an Uber while you get here.
Right.
Pick up people. What are you, exactly. Well, I'm paying you for these 2 hours you're here, and right. then wage, and get the hell out of here.
Exactly.
I do think a lot of things in our society have gone that way.
Right. To do what you want, what you love, you have to do something else.
That's not a respected, they're not respected trade. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, I think that can even go for service workers, for Christ's sakes. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
That it's the mentality of it all, and we do have to stand up for ourselves and demand
right.
that we want to be taken seriously, we want to be paid seriously, versus the person at the top often takes a ton of money. They get
a ton of money. Right.
Exactly.
They're fully respected. The board, you know, people get all this money off the top.
Exactly.
But the people who are doing the
work
don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that is another interesting thing that's coming out of the pandemic as well, is that, you know, you see so many young people just skipping that and just creating and mm-hmm. putting their work out there and mm-hmm. generating some type of income directly without right. the middle person. And so all of those places that were spending all that money, and you know, and now they're shut down and they're grappling to kind of figure out, well, how are these people putting these videos up and how are they getting so many, you know, now they have to rethink it. So it's completely thrown the whole thing upside down.
I mean, as you think, even in the past, I try to be aware of, to stay grateful, to stand in a mind of gratefulness versus a mind of confinement. Blaine and I have been able to create this entire thing and we have not seen each other since January.
Yeah.
And we live at two opposite sides of the world. Prior to this, we would have tried to have been in the same space every Saturday just to record the thing. And then I would have pulled Blaine out of the house and gone, come on, Blaine, we going down to see Robin so we can sit in her face and you would have had to feed us. You know, we're getting all this and you're going to get off and do the rest of your day. So it's I think it's given us but much more space to honestly do more.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? Playing like it's grown.
Oh yeah.
Like we were planning on doing one thing.
Just
and
one.
Now it's one show.
One
now
show.
Three. three shows a week.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. This whole Zoom thing. I've had a million meetings and it's like, you know, I used to go to New York every year during this time.
Yeah.
We're all on Zoom. We all have our meetings on Zoom now. It's like, I said, I hope we get back to, I really want to come back to New York. Because I get my hotel room. I get my airfare. It's a lovely long weekend.
You get to see all the people and this time of year. And it's just hot and it's great.
It's great. I said, so don't get used to this Zoom. But we've been able to stay in contact.
How would you like it to shift and change? Or, you know, or would you like to do more of the same?
Well, this year was really supposed to be to relaunch us again. I think my downfalls have always been advertisement, like anybody else, and paying for that advertisement. I like to stay on the course that I've built. I feel like this company really is different from other companies because we do a twist on classical ballets. So like our Nutcracker, right? 1940s Los Angeles, as opposed to 1800s England, you know, making sure that everything is integrated racially, you know, just so as always, I've always said to have my audience reflect what's on my stage, vice versa. It's everybody. Los Angeles is a melting pot. So I would just like to continue that and maybe just grow more awareness of the company and have our season, you know. Dorothy Chandler. I don't know why not.
Right? They probably have space available now.
That's what I was thinking too. You know, they brought in Miami City Ballet to do their Nutcracker, which is actually New York City Ballet's Nutcracker, Balanchine's Nutcracker. And I did complain. I mean, not because I'm such a small company, not that I would think they would take on my company, but people, they don't invest, you know, they only invest in who's the big name.
Right.
That actually, LA has never really grown anything of its own as far as a ballet company. They always brought the Joffrey, and we're going to have the Joffrey's going to be part of our, you know, Los Angeles company. So, you know, maybe someday, I'm 55 now. I'm thinking by 60, this is it.
Dorothy,
I'll give myself 5 more years, okay? So it'd be 25 years, and I'm reading everybody's books. It takes a long time to build a company.
Yeah. You know. But you really rise to the occasion. Your Nutcracker is beautiful. And I think that all you need to be is like, we get to go to the Dorothy Chandler. Oh, here we go. Here we go. That tree, you wouldn't even be able to see the top of the tree. Robin finds somehow 55-foot trees.
I know.
In the middle of these Nutcrackers. And beautiful. It's beautiful.
My dream would really be Wilshire Ebel for our small seasons, like the fall season and spring season, that sort of thing. Dorothy Chandler for the Nutcracker. And then our concerto project, which is, I always like to involve the dancers in choreographing. If they like to choreograph, it's our concerto project. So we all come together, use each other as dancers, put something together. I pick out the pieces that I like, and we do it in a venue like the Ford Amphitheater. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. So that would be
the dream.
And that our school is growing and putting kids into the company as they become mature enough.
All right.
Yeah.
So I want to know, what do you need?
I need mm-hmm. money.
What kind of, I mean, like big money?
I need corporate money, yes. I need corporate money to do this. And I mean, you know, when I look at my stuff, and you see my stuff, Indira, it's a shoestring. I mean, really, it's, I look at my stuff and I'm sorry, I'm just going to pat myself on the back because I put on a great production.
You do.
From the costumes to the choreography to the place in which we're doing it. I come from, you know, Cleveland Ballet, Tanya Lachine. I come from the ballet world so much. That's pretty much what I give out. I can't do the other.
It's like, it's always classy on a shoestring.
Classy on a shoestring. Oh, I like that.
Duct tape and bra straps. Hold it together. That's it. But you'd never know. You never know. Whenever I see a production, I always think like, this should be sponsored by Target. Like, and I personally, I'm going to put out there that I think, you know, you need to be mm-hmm. as specific as possible. My dream is always that it is Target is the sponsor of City Ballet of Los Angeles.
Aww.
And we're going to we'll hashtag that in every.
Let's do that. I like the way that sounds completely. You know, I think that I have suffered a little bit financially because it's me. I mean, I do ask people for money. I've asked you for money. I ask people for money and I get the money and I have my little core, little family, we love Robin kind of aspect to it, but it's never grown from there. I mean, I do get councilmen and, you know, stuff like that, but small little grants, but I don't have that person. I know that in my head, I am not the money person. I am not the person that has these skills. I have other skills.
Right.
So you need the money person. And we do have to, as artists, understand that sometimes,
yes.
You know, that as an artist, we may not be the financial people, let alone have the time, because it's a
right.
lot of time and it is a specific skill. People know how to go about even filling out the form to get the money. We all
exactly.
know filling out the form takes a long time, let alone calling people back and following up and cashing the check.
Right.
Oh, it takes a lot of time. So if a grant writer would be wonderful.
Right, exactly. And knowing that I can't do it all, I'm good. So this is another thing to be on my list during this time.
Well, Robin, this has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You did it.
To find more information and donate to City Ballet of Los Angeles, please go to cityballetofla.org.
We'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsors. Next, we hear from children's book author Adolfa Cole about the inspiration for her beautiful children's book, Ladybug Lily.
The children's book Ladybug Lily came about because I was finishing up my Reiki Master class, and you had to write a story about the transformation that happened to you between getting attuned for your Reiki Master and before you started class. And so my story was about a ladybug who didn't have as many spots as all the other ladybugs. You know, when you think about what people feel like they need right now that a lot of us are not getting what we are used to getting and having, and whether it's brunches or nails done all the time, now all of that's stripped away and you really have to focus on what is really the most important, what does really feed your soul. And I think that we are all having a sense of reckoning right now in order to transform into a higher self. So that's similar to what the book is about and actually happening right now to so many of us.
That's our show. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Afro Existential Podcast. Continue to email us or send us a voice memo at afroxpodcast@gmail.com with your questions and comments. Also, if you like the show and you have a minute, you can review and rate this podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you might get your podcast. We'll be back next week with another episode of our series, Creating Art in Crisis. Have a good day on purpose.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.